Welcome to the Primal Potential Podcast, the incremental anti-diet solution for effective permanent weight loss. Primal Potential is committed to helping you overcome emotional eating, hormonal imbalances, unhealthy habits, and your dieting mindset through education and inspiration. We don't just talk about what you should eat and what you should avoid. We talk strategy. Primal Potential is bridging the gap between knowing and doing. Each episode will leave you with concrete tips for making positive changes that make a difference. Primal Potential is here to help you lose weight, get healthy, and master fat loss naturally.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth Benton, and I just shared with our guest that I am like geek mode excited about today's episode. This is a topic that I am super passionate about that I think makes a massive difference in the success or failure of someone's journey to change their body and change their life, because weight loss is hard. Changing your habits is hard, and making it so that it's a lifestyle and we don't get in this cycle of losing the weight and putting it back on is a real challenge. That's why people aren't very successful most of the time. But if we only execute when things are easy, we'll never get there. And so many people fall into the trap of making excuses for why they can't do it. Like when it's easy, everything's great. But then it becomes the, well, this happened and that happened and this is my situation, as if our lives are so much more challenging than everybody else's. And I was talking about this with a past guest on the show, and we both realized that we are big fans of kind of a philosophical mindset known as Stoicism. And some of you know that before I majored in nutrition in college, I was actually studying Latin and Greek, which is where this philosophy originated. And so I am a huge fan. And basically, it boils down to turning adversity into opportunity. And so I want to welcome back the only second time guest on the show, Tim Bauer, and he is going to be talking about this with me, how we both have used this philosophy of turning adversity into opportunity and allowing it to strengthen you, how he implemented this in his 200-pound plus weight loss, and how we feel you can create this as an operating system for your life to help you be successful. So Tim, welcome back. I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, Elizabeth. I'm so excited to be here too, which is kind of fun. We're so passionate about Stoicism, which is so paradoxical and, you know, seemingly ironic, but I can't wait to talk about this today, and I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure. So we sort of found out by chance, I think maybe through quotes posted on Instagram or something like that, that we both really practice this Stoic philosophy. What does that mean to you? Like if somebody said to you, what is Stoicism and how is it a part of your life? What would you say?
So the way I really think about Stoicism is this concept. I know we've talked about this offline, the idea of being anti-fragile. So there is, you know, Taleb talks about there's no word that is the opposite of fragile. Now, when I say that, you might buck that idea and think to yourself, well, there's resilient, you know, isn't resilient or strong the opposite of fragile? Well, fragile means that, you know, if you think of a glass that's fragile, if you were to drop it or shake it inside of a box, that glass would break. And the opposite of that would be as if you were to shake something and it would actually become stronger as a result of that adversity, as a result of that trial. And Stoicism is really this idea or this concept that allows us to realize that the obstacles, the struggles, the trials are not things that necessarily are forcing us to throw up our hands and give up, that they actually have the opportunity to make us stronger, to lead us into different directions. It's not just an idea that, hey, everything happens for a reason, which I'd love to kind of revisit that principle, because it's something that I've, like, it kind of drives me crazy. It's like, you know, this idea that everything happens for a reason is a nice thought on a pillow, but at the end of the day, like, the reasons that things happen for, in my opinion, are things that we create. Like I take something bad that happens and I say, okay, look, I can create something positive from this. And mm-hmm. that is, and that's not necessarily like a cosmic, you know, like the universe is allowing it to happen for a divine purpose. And, you know, maybe that's true, but at the end of the day, I think that removes us from the responsibility to take that trial and say, okay, what can we do with this? How can I not only overcome this, but actually become stronger as a result of the trial? And that to me is what Stoicism is, this concept of anti-fragility.
So what does that have to do with your weight loss? Because you lost more than 200 pounds. So how did you kind of apply this anti-fragile philosophy to helping you achieve your goals?
Sure. So one of the things is no weight loss journey. You know, when we talk about losing 200 pounds, and you know, you want to average, you know, the websites will tell you, well, you can lose 2 pounds per week. That is ideal, right? Well, no one ever loses 2 pounds every single week for a year or 2 years or 3 years. You know, so one example of one of the trials you face during your weight loss journey are the constant plateaus. Mm-hmm. Or worse yet, the weight gains, you know, so mm-hmm. that's what's funny. You know, we all experience it where we have this week where we, you know, we ate nothing but clean, primal, whole foods. We were 100% spot on with our diet. We exercised according to our plan. Everything we did, we, you know, we're perfect at virtually. And then we step on the scale for our weekly weigh-in and we actually gain a pound or 2 pounds. Yeah. And, you know, I meet people all the time that have that experience. And the way that they deal with that is they throw up their hands, mm-hmm. they give up, or they start binging. They say, well, I tried so hard and nothing happened. Why am I, you know, going through this trial? I'm just going to, you know, grab
this
a bag of Doritos. This isn't worth it. This obstacle is insurmountable. And they, like what you said in the beginning of the show, they feel that their obstacle or their challenge is so unique to them, as if mm-hmm. that's never happened to anyone else. Like as if, you know, people that have lost 200 pounds have never experienced a weight gain. You know, I hear that all the time where someone's, well, that person can eat whatever they want and never gain weight. And I know it feels like that sometimes when we see our friends. And sure, maybe their metabolism is a little bit faster, but you know, you probably know more about the science on this than I do, but the fact mm-hmm. is most people are separated by a very small margin when it comes to, you know, metabolism and calorie burn, you know, mm-hmm. one versus another. So
So when you hit these plateaus, how did the Stoic philosophy kind of come into play to change your perspective?
So one of the Stoic principles is an idea of a premortem or a negative visualization. Mm-hmm. So what negative visualization is a practice that a lot of Stoics practice, that they actually prepared themselves for the worst, envisioned mm-hmm. the worst. Now, a lot of the times when I tell people about this principle, they think, well, that sounds like pessimism. You know, I don't want to be negative. I don't want to be a pessimist. And when mm-hmm. I say that, I don't mean they walk around talking about it all the time. They don't say, oh, I'm going to fail this week. Oh, I know it's not going to go right. That's not what I mean. What I mean is they sit down and they envision themselves failing and they say, how bad would that be? Would there be irreparable damage? What would I do in the event of this? Mm-hmm. Modern day CEOs actually hold these premortems in advance of the launch of a project sometimes.
Right.
And they say, okay, look, you know, let's say we release this product to the public and it fails. Mm-hmm. Why did it fail? What would be the reasons that would cause it to do that? And they use it as a means of fortifying potential weaknesses within a product or potential oversight. So for me, when I would step on that scale and I would gain weight, I would be prepared for that. I would say, look, I was able to control everything that was within my power. I ate right. I exercised right. The one thing that I cannot control is what that scale does. Or even if mm-hmm. my body burns fat, like I can't control what my body does. I can only control what I put into my body, and I can tinker with that. I can, you know, do certain variables. Maybe, you know, I'm averse to certain foods. Like I saw you had recently tweeted out like, hey, I need something other than nuts, I think. Cause you said like, you were like, nuts aren't for me. I don't do portion control well when it comes to nuts.
That is true.
And so, like, and I think a lot of us, honestly, especially in the paleo world, like, because nuts are kind of like our paleo or primal world, nuts are like our snacks. So, you know, we go mm-hmm. to them but they're, you know, especially when they're roasted salted, they're hyper palatable. They're really easy mm-hmm. to overeat. So, you know, negative visualization, I would say, is one of the big things. I envision what's the worst thing that could happen here, and then I prepare myself for it. I do everything to prepare it. And then heaven forbid it does happen, I'm ready for it emotionally. I don't have to binge to get over it. I don't have right. to throw up my hands and cry about it.
One of the things that I do with my coaching clients that I work one-on-one with is I ask them at the start of our time together, let's fast forward 6 months or a year, and let's imagine that you have not lost the weight. Right? You haven't made the progress that you want. Why? Tell me why. What are the different things that would have happened to get us to the end point of you not reaching your goals? And they'll say, well, you know, maybe I gave up on myself. Maybe I, you know, couldn't let go of the sweets. Maybe I wasn't able to stop drinking every night or whatever it is. And then one by one, we tackle that. Like, okay, so one of the hurdles that could stop you from reaching your goals is X. So what game plan can we put together to increase the chances of success in not letting that be something that keeps you from reaching your goals? So I think one of the practical ways that we can start to implement this way of thinking is by really honestly looking at what can hold us back, what gets in our way. And this can be as simple as I tend to make bad choices when the kids have a million activities going on and we aren't home for dinner. So what are some different things that I can put into place to make sure that on those busy nights, I have a good, healthy meal prepared for myself and my family?
Absolutely.
So no, that sort of identifying the obstacles is a powerful tool.
Yeah, and I think that's an awesome that's amazing, because most of the time when we're talking about losing weight, you know, we get a meal plan and we get a exercise plan and we kind of go out there and just like say, okay, I'm going to make this work. And it's kind of like you're going out into the forest and you're bringing a butter knife and you're going to hunt a bear, you know. Right. And it's like at some point we have to acknowledge that it wasn't just food that got us to obesity, that there was also something happened in our mind, something that, you know, is resulting in us, you know, overeating or eating the wrong foods. And by wrong foods, I don't mean like morally wrong, but, you know, foods that are contributing to our inability to be healthy.
Absolutely. And I love what you say about bringing a butter knife to kill a bear. I say all the time that for me, emotional eating was like bringing a pillow to a gunfight. Because it made me feel really good for a minute, but it was completely ineffective. So instead of just saying, I'm not going to emotionally eat anymore because I'm going to tough it out and I'm going to be strong and my goals are more important, really being critical and saying, when do I emotionally eat? What triggers me to do that? And how can I actively be engaged in getting stronger because of this? And one thing that I see, and I would imagine that you do too, is a reflection of my former self in lots of people that I meet. So before I kind of came out of this dieting cycle, right, I would always say, weight loss is just hard for me because my metabolism is jacked up and, you know, I can lose weight really well, but I just can't keep it off. And I would always kind of create excuses for why I hadn't done it yet. Now, it's not to say that they weren't real circumstances, like, oh, well, I work a lot. You know, I get to work at 6:30 in the morning and I'm usually there till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Well, that's real, but it doesn't really have anything to do with my inability to lose weight. So there's a lot of excuse making. One thing, and I'd love to know your thoughts on this. One thing that I always have my clients do is just for the sheer practice of it, every time you think of a reason you can't do something or a reason why you had to make a choice that wasn't in line with your goals, whether you made the choice or you didn't, no matter what the outcome was, just as a practice of seeing opportunities, write down 10 different ways you could have responded. So in the case of, let's say, you went through the McDonald's drive-through because you didn't have time to cook dinner, the kids' basketball practice went late, and you had to get to, you know, parent-teacher conference or whatever. Yeah, McDonald's is an option, and you can choose that. But don't lie to yourself and protect your ego by saying it was your only choice. Instead, go through the exercise of, I could have put something in the crock pot. We could have gone to a different place where there were healthier options. I could have got a salad at McDonald's. I could have gotten a chicken sandwich and enjoyed the chicken. I didn't have to eat the French fries. All these different things just to get in the practice of freeing yourself from this box that we live in. And we live in it for good reason, to protect our ego, right? I mean, we want to feel good about ourselves, and we feel better when we can justify our poor decisions, quite frankly, and our inability to make progress towards our goal. But when we get stuck in that trap and we don't look outside of the options and choices we're familiar with, we're really robbing ourselves of all of our power. And it's a habit that has to be broken. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, because at the end of the day, there's this great quote from Ryan Holiday that I think explains this, who's kind of like a modern day Stoic. And he says that where the head goes, the body follows. That mm-hmm. your perception will precede your action. And I'm a big believer that at some point we have to realize that there are other choices, that we're not just these Pavlovian dogs, you mm-hmm. know, that are stimulus response. I know in our first interview, we talked a little bit about Viktor Frankl, that mm-hmm. came up, this idea of, you know, being able to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. And this is one of the most liberating tenets of Stoicism that you're practicing with your clients, is that they can make other choices, that they're not just, you know, hey, I'm hungry, I have to go to McDonald's.
Right.
And what's interesting is people may not have ever had that thought. That was just what they've always done. And it's
they've never questioned the alternatives.
Absolutely. They've just been waiting for, you know, like that would be what they would do. That would, every single time I get hungry, I have to go to a drive-thru. Mm-hmm. On my way to work, you know, before, every single day when I would be on my way to the freeway, I could not drive to the freeway without stopping by that Mexican drive-thru on the way down there. Like, that was just what I did 100% of the time. I had to do it because that's the way that my car goes. Like, my car leaves the house, it goes to the drive-thru, and then it gets on the freeway. Like, my car is incapable of not stopping there, right? But at some point, we have to realize, wait a second, there are other choices, there are other opportunities. And the sooner we get that mental side of our game in check, the easier the physical things can be, the easier the choices can become.
What many of us do is we equate what's easy or what's comfortable or what's our patterned behavior with our only option. And that is just not real. That's just not true. But it is a practice to get to a point where we see all the other options. And you know, you mentioned Ryan Holiday. I know we're both big fans of his book, The Obstacle is the Way. And one of the quotes that he has in there is from the football coach, Nick Saban, who's a coach at University of Alabama. And he says, you know, don't think about the national championship. Don't think about the SEC championship. Think about what you can do in this drill, in this play, in this moment. So don't think about why all the cards are stacked against you, or why it's challenging, or why there's a million reasons you could go a different way. Focus on what is in your power right now. And if your perspective is so narrow, let it be a red flag to you if you're thinking, well, this is the only choice. It's never the only choice. So let that way of thinking be a trigger for you to say, you know what, I need to take a minute here and just for the sake of the exercise, even if I went through the drive-through, what are 10 different ways I could have approached this situation?
Yeah, and I think that at some point, what you're doing with your clients is absolutely important, and that's an incredible visualization exercise to make them realize the potential power of their decisions, the way that they do have power over them. But ultimately, you know, when I talk about I didn't lose all my weight, I lost my weight 1 pound at a time, I try to break it down into those steps for people to give them an understanding that they're not going to lose it all at once, to, you know, have realistic goals and to be able to focus on things one step at a time. But we have to realize that I didn't gain 225 pounds. I gained 1 pound 225 times. That was also the sum of a bunch of little decisions that became habits, that became so thoroughly ingrained that they were just a way of life for me. And I think that, you know, what Saban does with his players in terms of breaking it down into those little bite-sized increments, you know, not to use a weight loss pun with a bite size, but you can absolutely, you know, you're going to need to do that same thing as you pedal back from the habits that became a way of life that got you to the point where you got physically. But at some point, that became so ingrained in us that it was just a part of our brain. But we've all been there.
Yeah, and the thing is, nobody wakes up one morning and is like a masterful piano player, right? Or, you know, an NBA basketball player. It's practice. And so we have to embrace these opportunities to practice our new way of thinking. So one thing that has been incredibly powerful for me is when something happens that could be seen as adversity, whether it's an injury or a difficult social situation or a trip where I feel like I'm not in control of all of my food choices, I look at it as what an awesome opportunity for me to practice and get better at these things that I know I need to improve. So instead of being like, oh man, I was doing so well, but now I have this business trip and I'm not gonna be able to make my choices. No, this is an incredible opportunity for you to say, this isn't going to be as easy and as effortless as it is when I'm at home. So let's work on the skill sets that I need to develop to be able to handle these situations more effectively. And to me, that's a cornerstone of changing your mindset so that you can achieve your goals and maintain them.
Yeah, and one of the things that comes with that mindset of calling it a practice, you know, you've used that term a few times now. Stoic philosophy is just that. It's a practice. It's not a religion. It's not like you don't have this religious awakening and then you go and get like baptized in like Marcus Aurelius's bathtub. Right. And then from then on, like you're a Stoic, right?
Would be really cool. I'd totally sign up for that.
I would be down. It would probably be filled with like extra virgin olive oil or something. Anyway.
Right, totally.
So yeah, there's no like religious Stoic experience. It is a daily practice. And by calling it that, inherent in that word is, okay, I'm practicing. It's giving me permission to fail. It's not like we don't envision Michael Jordan going out to practice basketball and making every single shot. It's not like he went on the basketball court and he was shooting, you know, and he made 99 in a row and then he missed the 100th and he said, you know what, basketball's clearly not for me. Mm-hmm. But yet we do that in weight loss where like we'll have a perfect week and then we'll have a bite of a candy bar and we'll be like, you know what, I can't diet. Like I'm not a diet. Like I can't stay faithful to my diet, you know, and that's
right.
We use these terms like cheat meal where like, you know, and I know, you know, a lot of other speakers talk about this where we're not married to our diet. Like that is a really bad visualization where, you know, to cheat on our diet is akin to adultery. Like we had,
failure and we've just like totally dropped the ball.
Exactly. And we beat ourselves up over that. When we allow ourselves to call our health a practice, it's something that we're practicing every single day. It allows us to make mistakes, forgive ourselves, or even get to a point where we don't even need forgiveness, where we just realize, okay, I'm doing my best here and I'm gonna focus on what I can change from this day forward. Because I don't care how powerful you are, I don't care how brilliant you are, nothing you can do can change what you did yesterday. You know,
and identifying what is the learning opportunity within this failure, right?
Precisely.
Within this decision that I made that isn't aligned with my goals, how can I improve myself in the long term by really studying this and evaluating this instead of what I think I used to do, like put my head in the sand. That didn't happen. I'm not listening. I'm not looking. Like, what cookies? There were no cookies. Like,
right.
Move right along. Instead, now, if I do something that I'm not proud of or I do something that doesn't make me feel good about my health or my body, I study the heck out of it. And I love the Buddhist phrase, no mud, no lotus. Mm. You cannot expect to get where you want to go. And you can, if you think that this is going to be like a path of rose petals and unicorns and rainbows and every day is a dream come true, you got another thing coming. I think both of us can say that that's just not the case. And so when we trudge through the mud, when we have the bad days, let's be like, this is just a part of the process. And I'm not going to hate it. And I'm not going to say, this sucks, this is miserable. I'm going to say, I'm getting better because of this. This is an opportunity for me to grow. And this is an opportunity for me to break from my past patterns of constantly making excuses to pad my ego and instead embrace this new lifestyle that I know I deserve.
Absolutely. And I can think of so many examples of that. You know, I don't know about you, but when I made the decision where I was going to start, you know, getting my health under control, my outside problems didn't stop. You know, it's not like life didn't say, hey, let's give this guy a few years off so he can lose weight. Right. That didn't happen. In the middle of my weight loss journey, I lost my father. I actually, you know, I don't talk a lot about this out in the public arena, but I went through a divorce in the middle of my weight loss journey. Like, that was something that was this devastating step. You know, I lost weight for me. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to do it for me. But in the back of my mind, I definitely had this idea that maybe if I lost weight, like, my family life would improve, or my relationships would improve, or, you know, things would get better in certain areas of my life. And that just, you know, that wasn't necessarily reality. I wasn't sad because I was overweight. I was sad and I was overweight. Those, you know, correlation wasn't causation in this case.
And, you know, but that's a major kudos to you, because many people, and I think we both see this all the time, take any type of hardship in their life as, you know, I gotta stop, and I can't possibly put healthy foods in my mouth when my finances are a mess, or my marriage is struggling, or my job is stressful, or my kids are acting up. And they will take any out to say, this is just too much for me, as if you're the only person on the planet who doesn't have a perfect life.
Absolutely.
They're separate. And so if we can just embrace the challenges and ask ourselves, one thing that I think is very powerful, if you're listening to this right now, maybe take a moment later today and ask yourself, is my perspective what's causing the problem here? Am I always focused on why I can't, why it's hard, why I shouldn't, why it would be easier to stay the way I am? Because you can just as easily choose to focus on why you can and what you are capable of. Don't you think?
Absolutely. I think you could even, you know, expound upon that and say to yourself, what makes this the very best moment to start a health practice? What about this moment in my life? What advantages do I have right now? You know, when I was in college, you know, and I took my first marketing class, they taught us to do a SWOT analysis.
So SWOT, I do this all the time. I've done an entire podcast episode on SWOT analyses. That's funny.
I need to go back and listen to that one. So, you know, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and how to leverage.
That's right.
And it's a very stoic idea, right? Because no company enters a marketplace at just, you know, everything is perfect. There are going to be some weaknesses. There are going to be some threats out there. But you need to find out what your strengths are and what the opportunity is in order to leverage those from a personal standpoint. So for me, like, to give a practical example, when I lost my father, that was this opportunity to analyze, okay, my dad had been overweight his entire life, with the exception of a few times where he would yo-yo, right? Mm-hmm. And even in the end of his life, he actually had gastric bypass surgery, and he did end up losing the weight, but he continued to smoke. He still, you know, consumed alcohol, and he actually had a stroke, a debilitating stroke, and he died, I think 68 when he passed away, which, you know, is not young, but it's definitely not the age you should. That's premature. You know, I don't want to die at 68. I don't, you know,
right.
I want to be a centenarian, you know, and be like, you know, squatting three times my age at 100, right? Like, that's
right.
where we want to be.
Right.
And so, it gave me an opportunity to say, okay, look, this is an opportunity for me to, you know, recommit myself to my journey, to realize that this sum of small decisions can add another 30, 40 years to my life. And I actually went out and I went to one of those online, you know, how long are you going to live, you know, surveys, which are obviously 100% accurate, right? They can tell you, not really, you know, they don't, they just kind of, based on, you know, habits and circumstances, how long will you live? And I answered it twice. I did it first as if I hadn't, you know, done anything. Like, let's find out. And then I did it again as if, you know, my current circumstances, what I was doing and where I weighed. And I had added almost 30 years onto my life. almost 30 years. And there's something to be said about taking these moments to find out what can I do to turn this into Kindle for my fire, mm-hmm. and not, you know, be a fire extinguisher.
Absolutely. And that, you know, I said before we started recording that this could totally be a quote-a-thon. But, you know, going back to the obstacle is the way, which I'll link to in the show notes, one of the quotes in there is from the former CEO of Intel, and he says, bad companies are destroyed by crisis, good companies survive them, and great companies are improved by them. And I think the same is true of people. There will always be struggles, and you can let that define your progress, or you can skate by, right? Or you can say, I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this as ammunition. I'm going to use this as a chance to prove to myself how strong I am, so that at the end of this process, I know without a shadow of a doubt that I'm unstoppable, that no matter what comes up in my life, nobody's tying me down and like force feeding me Twinkies and Coke. So no matter what's going on in my life, I can stay in control of my food choices. No matter what's going on in my finances, I can stay in control of my food choices. No matter what's going on in my marriage, I can stay in control of my food choices. And that is a paradigm shift. And I get it. If you're out there and you're thinking, yeah, but my kids don't like to eat vegetables, or yeah, but I, you know, I work shifts and I'm not home that much. Listen, the truth is that is a story you're telling yourself to protect your ego because it's easier for you. I'm sorry. And I know that that's tough. And like I've said on previous episodes, if somebody had said that to me a few years ago, I would have kicked him in the face. And that's cool. You don't know where I live, so you can't kick me in the face. But I get it if you want to. And that's something you really need to think hard about, because I'm not saying that your circumstances aren't real. I'm not saying that it's not a struggle that your kids don't like vegetables, or that you work the night shift, or that you have extreme cravings or whatever. I'm just saying, separate your circumstance from your choices, because you've married them in your head and it's not true. It's just not true.
It reminds me of, and not to wax biblical, I was a philosophy major in school because I really liked wasting time. So I had aspirations to go into law. So philosophy is a really
me
good
too. That's why I was studying Latin and Greek. Too funny.
Okay, awesome. And so we both end up, you know, pursuing useless undergraduate degrees
exactly
before
right.
moving on to other things.
That's exactly right.
So at any rate, one of the texts that I draw a lot of philosophy wisdom from is the Bible. And so Paul, you know, is writing to the Corinthians at one point, and the Greeks, you know, they know a lot about passion and temptation, and mm-hmm. you know, they were given to fall to physical things a great deal. They liked good food. They liked, you know, good women, and you know, good everything. And so there's this one really liberating phrase where he tells him, he says, look, there is no temptation that has taken you that is not common to man, that, you know, you're not facing anything. This is not like you're not the first person to find McDonald's. Like right. We've all been there, and we know how good those fries are. Like, we know what's there. You absolutely have the power to do it. And, you know, I heard an example from Stephen R. Covey where he used to teach this, that in any circumstance, you can choose your attitude, that Viktor Frankl ideal. And he mm-hmm. talks about one time in a conference, he taught that principle, and someone actually stood up and said, no, you don't understand. And they actually fight this idea.
Yeah.
That, and I've had this same experience. One of the things that I teach in my professional practice is, because I do a lot of public speaking, I take people through this identity and role exercise. So the way mm-hmm. I do it is I tell people, say, look, I want you to imagine that you are on an island. It's a desert island. You're there alone, you know, but you're safe. You have food, you have water, everything's okay. But you don't have any role there. You're not a father. You're mm-hmm. not a husband, you're not a sister, you're not a CEO, mm-hmm. you're not a CFO, you're just you. Right. You have no role, you have no utility to society other than just you're you. You're
okay.
you. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your value to the world? What is your value to the world in that island? And, you know, what you'll have happen is between 20 to 30% of people will actually tell you they're a zero. You know, and people will be in between, and maybe 20% of people will say, I'm still a 10. I'm still a 10, you know, because they were taught positive mental attitude as a kid, and you know, that so they believe that they're a 10. That's good. That's great. And then I say, great, okay, take that same example. It's a newborn baby. Newborn baby on that island, scale of 1 to 10, what is the value? And everyone says 10. You know, no one, unless you're a serial killer, like no one says, you know, oh, no, baby, you know, one, useless, you know, useless. But in reality, a baby has no role, right? A baby has no role, no job. A baby is just a baby. And yet we all rank it a 10. We're all born 10s. You know, we're all born unlimited potential blank checks, right? We're born as a blank check to the world. And somewhere along the line, we start erasing zeros. Like we start saying, you know what? Maybe I'm only, you know, $100,000. You know, maybe I'm worth 50. Maybe I'm worth 30. Maybe I'm worth nothing at some point. And I think that ultimately, you know, we can make that choice to realize that no matter what we face, we have the opportunity to become stronger, because trials are going to come whether we like it or not. Crap is going to happen.
That's right.
Right? Like that, you know, stuff happens, as it were. And so, you know, it's going to happen either way. It's your choice how you handle that, how you process that. Will you let it make you stronger? Will you let it, you know, you're faced with a barbell. You can pick it up or you can cry underneath it, right?
And nobody wants to be like, yeah, I'm just an average Joe. Like, I'm a schmo like everybody else. Everybody wants to be above average. So don't fall into the trap of being like, I mean, I just have no power here. This circumstance is stronger than I am. And you said, you know, you're not the first person to come upon McDonald's. You're not the first person to struggle with your weight while you have kids. And just because you have kids, or just because you lost your job, or just because you have an injury, doesn't mean that you can't achieve your health goals. I mean, that's ridiculous. If you choose to let that take away your power, that's a choice. And I know I'm being very strong, but I think that this is a strong message that people need to hear, because we need to separate our ability to choose from the things that are going on in our life, because it's never going to be this like bed of roses, perfect time where every day we wake up motivated and every day the stars are aligned. We don't crave anything bad. We don't have a difficult social situation. And so you can be, you know, one of the pack and say, well, when everything's great, I'm going to do great. But as soon as things get rocky, well, I just can't, because my situation is too hard. That's just succumbing to the world, and it's surrendering your power. And you don't have to be that way. Focusing on your power magnifies your power. And focusing on all the things that are stacked against you magnifies those obstacles. And so just as a practice, start listing out the options. It doesn't matter what choice you make, good, bad, or indifferent, but at least start to expose your brain to the fact that your one narrow way of thinking isn't the only choice. You are not as powerless as your ego is telling you you are. That is a protective mechanism, a defense mechanism that we've built over the years of our struggle. And I want to do a little activity, Tim, to kind of help people apply this. So why don't we each, and we'll start with you, or we can start with me, it doesn't matter, whatever, if you need some time to think about it. I want us to each kind of give one common example, obstacle, excuse that we hear from people on a regular basis, and how this Stoic philosophy could be applied to make a change in the behavior. So do you have one top of mind that you want to kind of dive into and give it as an example?
Well, one thing that I get a lot, and I do have one actually, and I would love to hear kind of your thoughts on it, and I'd love to talk about mine too. I'll tell you, one of the most common emails I get these days about people, you know, starting to lose weight, and one of their biggest fears as it pertains to, you know, quote unquote failure, and I don't even want to call this failure, but I think that's how they see it, is they say, hey, I have 100 or 200 pounds to lose. And I wanted to know if you have loose skin, because what I'm worried about is I'm going to lose all this weight and I'm going to have loose skin.
Right. Fear.
It's a huge fear of people, and mainly probably because, you know, the advent and popularity of Biggest Loser and Obese to Beast, that guy who was on Ellen. He did that really popular viral video. And, it, you know, for a lot of people, it was inspiring and it was awesome to see his body image. But a lot of people got terrified. They said, oh, my gosh, if I lose weight, is that what I'm going to look like? You know, which, by the way, ironically, like if you follow that guy's Instagram feed, he has 100 girls throwing themselves at him every single time he posts a selfie. So, you know, like to look like him as if that would be the worst thing. So, you know, that's something that I talk about a lot is, you know, when people ask me about loose skin, I tell people, yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I do have it. I posted my own little obese to beast montage I showed that recently. I have a little bit in my underarms and in my legs and in my stomach and in my chest. I have it everywhere. But the reality of the situation is I wear mine like a badge of honor. It is a symbol of the greatest thing I ever did for myself and for my family. And for the world, my weight loss has served me so well personally, professionally, and has allowed me to go forth and help and inspire others, which is so humbling to me. It has become one of my life's greatest works is to do that. And I absolutely embrace that as an opportunity. Will, you know, and then of course the question is, will I ever, you know, get surgery? A lot of the times I'm asked that question. And you know, I'm not against having the skin removed. I know a lot of people go through that, but honestly, it's just a major surgery, and I don't want to lose the time lifting. Like I don't want to have to. I love weight. Like that means taking 6 weeks off of weightlifting, and I'm going to choose to have the loose skin or more. You know.
And you know, I get that question a lot too, and my response to people is, don't borrow trouble from tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen. So, okay, let's play through that scenario. Like somebody comes and I have this conversation with people all the time. I'm worried that if I lose the weight, I'm going to have loose skin. Okay, so what are your choices? You stay the way you are because you're afraid, or you lose the weight and you have loose skin and you have to figure out how to deal with that, or you lose the weight and you don't have loose skin, right? So I lost 140 pounds. I don't have, at this point, loose skin on my arms or my legs. But I did around my abdomen, and I chose to have skin removal surgery. It's been almost a year. And that was just a decision that I made. Would I be miserable if I hadn't had it? No, absolutely not. But it doesn't really matter. If you're starting out, don't borrow trouble from tomorrow. Can you do anything about it today? No. So do you want to lose the weight? Yeah. Well, then don't sweat it. Like, deal with it if and when it happens. It might not be an issue for you, but staying the way you are certainly will be an issue. So my response to that is always, don't borrow trouble from tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's a waste of energy, and it, again, it takes away the power that you have to do something with the moment you have now. So that's my thing. And then as far as, you know, the common things that I hear from people, one is people will say, I don't like to cook and I really don't have time to cook. And they have convinced themselves that that's why they can't burn fat.
Yeah.
Because they don't like to cook and they don't have time to spend in the kitchen. Well, I don't love to cook. You know, I don't mind it. But one thing I don't have is time. And that doesn't prohibit me in any way. Because even if you never bought a single pot or pan again, you can choose fat loss friendly foods, right? Whether it's at restaurants, that is not a problem. Whether it's with simple pre-made options, that is not a problem. So instead of having this narrow perspective of, well, I just can't do what you do because I don't like to cook and I don't have time, instead create a list of the different things that you could choose that don't require cooking or time or preparation, and then look at the alternative. So the alternative is to just keep doing what you're doing and be unhappy and unhealthy, or start cooking, or find healthy fat loss foods that don't require cooking.
Absolutely.
Right? So just evaluating those options. I mean, do you hear things like that?
Oh, all the time. And what's funny is, you know, some of the problems I come across, I'm almost like, oh, you know what? I didn't even realize that could have been a problem, because I definitely had that problem. When I first started losing weight, I was in a job that had me leaving the house at 4 a.m. and I oftentimes wouldn't get back until 6 p.m. and I was not going to an office. I was on the road, and I live in California where, and I, you know, sometimes my job would be like, I would be in Palm Springs for a week, but I would be on the road that entire time. No refrigerator. You know, sometimes in excess of 110 degrees in that part of the world, not the most conducive place to pack and carry food.
Right.
All that, when I would go to Palm Springs, I'd be like, oh, well, I have to buy an extra ice pack. Like, I didn't even realize that was an excuse I could have used. Like, it didn't enter into my psyche. So to me, like, that gives you an opportunity to say, okay, what can I do with this? How can I eat on the road? So, like, I've written several articles on how to eat healthy on the road, because my job sometimes I work in an industry where I rebuild homes that have fires and floods. And the reality of my job is that the fire typically does not call in advance. I don't know that it's coming. You know, like I get a
that
call.
That damn fire, so inconsiderate.
It never lets me know it's going to happen first.
Right.
So I'll get a call and like, okay, this person's house just literally burnt down and you've got to go out there to help them. Okay, well, great. So like, I got
to
go.
You didn't have time to pack your lunch.
I did not have time, unless I made time the night before or, and a lot of times that's just the reality. I've got to find something on the road. So I have, I've like thought this out and I've researched this, and I know, you know, half a dozen places that I can go. For me, like, one of my number one go-tos was I would go to a grocery store. I could find, I would go to the deli counter. I would get some slices of like roasted turkey, and, you know, I would find like some veggies. I'd get, there have been times where I've bought like a cucumber or celery, and I literally, like, I'll go in the bathroom and wash that off. You know, I'm like a, I'm practically a homeless person the way I eat sometimes. And I don't, you know, I've got no problem like doing weird things like that. I don't care how I look, because, you know, in terms of looking silly or weird.
Because it's a priority.
It's a priority. It's what you do. It's, you take this and you say, okay, great. What do I have to do to make this work? How can I find a way? And I know, I think we talked about the slow cooker on our last meal. That's a, another way. I am not a chef, but I am really good at throwing a bunch of food in a pot and hitting the on button. Like, nobody does that better than me.
That's right. Just yesterday, I was like, I don't really have anything in mind to prepare. So I took a bunch of frozen chicken thighs and put them in a crock pot with like some cloves of garlic and some coconut aminos and some bacon fat. And I was like, it'll turn out.
Exactly. And sometimes it doesn't taste like lobster, but you know what? At the end of the day, you make do with what you have. And I've definitely done a, what do I have in the pantry to go with this chicken breast in the crock pot thing before. And there's nothing wrong with that. And honestly, like, if you're in a hurry, to me, nothing is better than, you know, an omelet at night. And
that's right.
I can make that in 10 minutes. Like last night, I was getting home late, and I'm a big hockey fan. I was going to the Ducks Kings game, and like, I had like 10 minutes to cook, and so it was an omelet night, and that's what I did. And
that's
so, you know, you just make do with whatever you can, whatever.
And you know, I can imagine that there are people listening right now thinking, I mean, that's great for you, Elizabeth. That's great for you, Tim. But like, I'm just starting out. And I want to say, you don't have to have this like renegade, you know, I'll wash my cucumber in the grocery store bathroom kind of attitude starting out. I think a great practice is just to make a list of the options, right? No matter what you choose, start to identify, here are 10 different ways I could have responded to this, just to train your brain to realize that your operating system hasn't been serving you, but fortunately for the world, it's not the only one there is. So you can start by just practicing that, and also start by, instead of reacting with, oh my gosh, this is just my luck, when something unfortunate happens, say, huh, this is a really cool opportunity for me to prove to myself that I'm stronger than I've been in the past, and I am a work in progress, and I'm going to get creative and think of a solution. And it might not be a 10 out of 10, but, you know, if I respond at a level 6 out of 10 instead of my normal 1 out of 10, that's fantastic. So it is truly a practice, and you don't come out of the gate, you know, being the NBA basketball star, being the, you know, concert pianist. you start with practice. And so just commit to one small step and start to work on expanding beyond your excuses. It's not a judgment. It's not a criticism. It's a challenge. So, Tim, if somebody's listening to this right now and they're thinking, you know, yeah, I do justify my poor decisions and I do tend to make a lot of excuses. What do you want to leave them with as a parting thought to help them start to turn their perspective around?
Well, one thing as far as a parting thought to turn their perspective around is to they're going to see a lot of opportunity in their habits. But I want to say one other thing in so much that you need to not look for the perfect opportunity. One of the things that I'm always fearful of is like people say, okay, just like when I tell people start with one step, I've gotten pushback where people are like, well, what step though? You know, like because right. You know they want to look, they want to be perfect, and right. They're
what's
trying.
What's one and what's one A and what's yeah. One B? Yeah,
exactly. Like, can you give me the five foods I should eat to lose? You know, because
I'm going to the grocery store right now. What's on your list?
Yeah, and like Men's Fitness like tells you the five foods you must eat to burn fat. Right. You know, right. there are no five foods. You know,
no.
Sometimes you have to do stuff. So like, I think that you start with where you can. If I could talk, I think one of the greatest movies about stoicism that is not about stoicism is the greatest American movie ever made, which is The Karate Kid. And yeah. So, and I only say that a little bit tongue in cheek, but the Karate Kid, if you'll remember that movie, Daniel goes to Mr. Miyagi's house. And if you haven't seen it, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, it's great. You should check it out. So Daniel wants to learn karate, and Mr. Miyagi, who is this Yoda-like figure, he's very enigmatic, difficult to understand, talks funny. He has Daniel come to his house. He finally agrees to teach him karate, and Daniel gets there. And I don't have you seen this movie, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you remember what he has Daniel do? But
I'm gonna be watching it again.
So he has Daniel, like, do chores, basically. So he waxes a bunch of cars. Mm-hmm. He sands a wood deck that is the largest wood deck. And then he paints a fence that is basically the Great Wall of China length of fence, right? He is painting and sanding and washing. And, you know, he tries to ask Mr. Miyagi, why am I doing that? Like, I came here to learn karate,
right.
And you've basically made me your houseboy. Like,
right.
What am I doing here? And, you know, at the end of this sequence, finally Mr. Miyagi, you know, shows him what he's been doing. And he says, I want you to wax the car. And he does that, the waxing the car. If you've ever waxed a car, you know, mm-hmm. You do it in a circular motion. And he shows okay. him how by doing this circular motion, he has learned how to block a punch. So if you can mm-hmm. visualize doing a clockwise circle with your right hand, that would be blocking a punch away from your head.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows him how painting the fence, you know, going up and down, same thing, and sanding the floor is another thing. And so I would say that is probably not a way that anyone ever learns karate.
Right.
But it worked. So mm-hmm. don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Don't when you're looking for that one thing to do, do what is most logical, but most importantly, do something that you can stick to as a practice as best as possible. You're not going to do it perfectly, I get that. But whatever comes to mind as one thing that you can do right now on a daily basis with a reasonable amount of success, that should be the thing that you start with.
I totally agree.
Yeah, when it comes to like organizing your life, like some people use Palm Pilots. Well, not Palm Pilots, but smartphones. Wow, I'm dating myself.
Some people. Whoa.
Some people use, you know, they have like a little Moleskine notebook, mm-hmm. or they have like an actual like planner. There's still a few of those out there. Mm-hmm. I always tell people whatever works the best for you, that should be right. Whatever you can stick to. Mm-hmm. Whether it's organization, dietary exercise is the same thing. Like, there's this big argument right now. What's better, cardio or weightlifting? Like, to me, if you're doing something, good for you. Like,
whatever's best is what you'll do.
Exactly. If your daily exercise is like you like swinging a mace at a sandbag.
Yep.
Like, good. Dude, are you sweating? Right. You're getting your heart rate up? You're not hurting yourself? Then by all means, like,
yeah,
do
you
that.
You like so. It. Right. Like, and, I have the same approach with my clients that I work with, and I talk about that a lot on the podcast. Do not fragment your energy across 16 different pursuits that you think are what defines this perfect program. Start with one thing and practice it. Eventually, it will feel habitual and effortless. And then and only then does it make sense to move on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
You know, I just think that this whole conversation of stoicism is really about, it's really about empowering yourself. It's really about not allowing life to get in the way of what matters to you. Because, you know, I was having a conversation with one of my clients recently, and you know, when something comes up in our job, we still deliver, right? We either stay late or we go in early or we skip lunch or we get other people involved in the project. But as soon as we hit an obstacle, we don't say, "Up, trash on the project, that's over." And if we did that, we would lose our job. And it's the same way with parenting. Like, you don't just take care of your kids when everything's easy and, you know, you have food in the house and whatever else. Like, whatever comes up, you make sure your kids are cared for. But when it comes to our own personal goals, when things get rough, we're like, I got to back off from this. And so I think that the Stoic philosophy is really about saying tough times are going to come. And not only am I not going to run from them or make excuses, but I am going to use them to make me stronger. So if you are listening to this, you know, I really just encourage you to start by stepping outside of the mental framework of your excuses and starting to identify ways that you can allow obstacles to make you stronger, to make you more resilient, and as Tim said, to really become anti-fragile. So Tim, thank you so much for being here and talking about this with me. I know we both really love this and we could go on and on. I'm going to link to Tim's blog and all of his social media accounts on the show notes page over on primalpotential.com under the podcast tab. Any last thoughts you want to leave with our audience, Tim?
I would just say, you know, I think we should probably maybe even link to a few resources on the subject too,
because
I think that there's so much value to be gained from filling your head with good thoughts. One of the things that I definitely believe in, I know we talked about this before, is, you know, the mental journey is so important, so key. And one of the best things I ever did for myself was filling my head with good words and books and podcasts in my ears and just staying around those supportive people. And I really believe Stoicism helped me do it. So I'm just so excited. I'm a total fanboy when it comes to this stuff. And really glad to be here and love your show. And thank you again for having me.
My pleasure. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to leave comments with your questions. Let us know what you want to hear more about and what you're struggling with, because that is what Primal Potential is all about, meeting you where you're at and helping you overcome your challenges so that you can reach your full potential. So until next time, guys, stay healthy.